Nicolet Bank is honored to support all who strive to make communities great. Newsmakers is a production of Wisconsin Eye. To keep programs like this free and accessible to all, please consider a charitable gift to wisi.org/donate or text WISI to 44321. This program is brought to you from Wisconsin Eye's Margaret Farrow Studio.
Hello and welcome to Newsmakers. I'm your host, Lisa Pugh. President Trump's first weeks in office have been a whirlwind of headline-making decisions, though any lasting impact on Wisconsin is still yet to be determined. Conservatives say that Trump has a mandate to install his vision, while liberals argue that there will be harmful unintended consequences. Joining Newsmakers today is John Nichols, progressive author and associate editor of the Capital Times, and Jay Curtis, general counsel with the Institute for Reform in Government. Thank you for both of you for joining us.
It's an honor.
Thanks for having me.
So when the show airs, President Trump will be in office now for exactly 2 weeks. What's one word you would use to describe these first 2 weeks of his presidency?
Chaotic.
Jake, what would be the word you would use?
Disruption.
Disruption and chaotic. John, how is President Trump's approach to the presidency different than in another administration where we're changing parties?
It's radically different. And I think it's because Donald Trump is, and to borrow Jake's term, he's a disruptor. He was a disruptor within the Republican Party. I think now that he is in the presidency, he has very little loyalty to the traditional ways of doing things. I think that's part of why he was elected. And I think that if you were to compare it to even a Franklin Roosevelt, who came in a very, at a crisis moment, and had a lot of demands on him, created the concept of the first 100 days. Roosevelt, I've actually recently looked back on some of the clips, moved in a much more methodical way and frankly, a slower way. The question, I guess, is coming in and seeking to do almost everything in the first couple weeks an effective way of governing, or is it more an effective way of sort of shocking the system into understanding that the next 4 years are going to be a period of great change?
Some people have been calling that flooding the zone. And the president did promise on day one that he was going to do some things that shocked people. Jake, I know that you and I talked and you said that you think in some ways the media is creating some hysteria around some of these initial decisions. What would be an example of something you think is a little overblown here?
Well, so When I use the word disruptor, I think in a positive way. Now, you bring up FDR, which is interesting. I actually just watched a documentary with my daughter about Teddy Roosevelt. Mm-hmm. And if you kind of look at Teddy Roosevelt presidency, he was very much a disruptor.
Absolutely.
Within both the Republican Party and nationally. And if you look at Donald Trump, you know, we've already went through 4 years. And I think He was a disruptor then, but maybe with not as much knowledge about how government works. And I think it's going to be a little different with a second term. But he's a disruptor in the sense that he does, I don't know if I'd use the word mandate, but I mean clearly a very convincing win. The American public want things to go in a different direction. Even in states like New York, plus 9%. I mean, so there was a significant swing. He won all seven swing states. So I think he's viewing this as he has a mandate.
So people should be expecting some of these actions?
I think he should. And when you look at, so you asked about a specific example. You look at this kind of freeze over funding. It was a memo that exempted Social Security, Medicaid, and I think it was, quote, you know, contributions or benefits to individuals. So that carves out a huge portion of funding. And so really what I viewed it was as let's take a pause and look at all the government funding grants that go to the states and let's look at them for 2 weeks and see, you know, are there efficiencies? Are there things we can, you know, really look at and make some changes to, which is what he ran on. And so with respect to the media, you know, there was immediately, you know, this hysteria where people are going to lose their Social Security benefits. Well, if you actually read the memo, it was specifically exempted. And so I just think we need to just take a pause. Every incoming administration is going to do things differently. Biden certainly came in after Trump and did things very differently from day one. And I think we need to just spend some time and focus on some of the policy initiatives he's going to put forward. And then, yeah, maybe if there are unintended consequences, let's analyze them.
Well,
but
Jake sounds so reasonable here. Right?
I mean, we'll talk more about that OMB memo in a little bit. I want to ask you, too, about some of Trump's appointees that have been coming through Congress and testifying. We saw Robert F. Kennedy testify before Congress this last week. He is nominated to head up the Department of Health and Human Services. How is he a different or not type of nominee?
He's about as different as you get. On a whole bunch of levels. But let's frame this, and it's good to talk about the nominees and in the context of what Jake was saying. Because as I said, Jake presents it so reasonably, right?
It's a new administration.
Right, exactly, and all this. But of course, if you're going to do like a pause on all these things and you're going to really do it in a serious way, you might have told people a week in advance or something like that. You might give them a little bit of notice. And I think that's where the trouble comes in, right? It is the chaos. Disruption versus chaos. I would argue it's chaotic to just do it, right, and not have, you know, some sort of sense of what's going on. And I would also, just one quick questioning of the mandate argument. We had a very close election. On election day, it looked like a wider margin, but when they counted all the votes, and we might agree that we should count votes more quickly in the United States, when they counted all the votes, it was a difference of about 1.5% between Harris and
Trump.
And
you don't think that's a mandate? That the American public's not expecting this type of disruption?
No, it was a closely divided electorate, and at the end of the day, no question, Trump got a swing to him. That you give him that. But if you actually step back and say, you know, where are the American people at? They're sort of torn, and there are divisions within these parties. And so what you've seen with Donald Trump when he's come to power is that he's moved as if he had something, you know, far in excess of what Roosevelt or Reagan or anybody had. It's just, you know, I could pretty much going to do all these things because I said I was going to do them. And that's especially writ large, I think, in the nominees.
So about Kennedy, what do you expect to see from him?
Well, I don't know if he'll be confirmed. I think there's a good chance he gets confirmed. I watched the hearing closely, and it was contentious at times. I think Kennedy, it was fascinating to see him back off on many of the things that he's fought on for a very, very long time.
Around vaccines.
Vaccines and a host of other issues. And he clearly wants the job. There's no question of that. But it was kind of a difficult situation where you literally say, I didn't say that. And they said, well, okay, here's the tape of you say, or here's
the... So it remains to be seen if he gets confirmed.
And I would just, one last thing I'll say on it is that keep an eye on Cassidy from Louisiana, the one Republican on the committee who I think might swing. And I think that's one of the most fascinating parts of this whole struggle, right? Which is the question of, can Donald Trump hold his Republican Party together if he can?
Even around things like nominees. What kind of changes would you expect in a Trump administration in the Department of Health and Human Services that Kennedy might be nominated or appointed to?
So I was not expecting to be as fascinated with some of these nominations.
They are interesting.
They're very interesting. And from a kind of a political science standpoint, if you really listen to kind of the questioning and the answers within the context of, you know, who this person is, where they came from, Kennedy was very clear throughout the campaign and surprisingly became a huge part of the campaign. And so when we're talking mandate and things like that, there should be no surprise that Kennedy is really singularly focused on, you know, to use the phrase, you know, making America healthy again. But I think he's asking really interesting questions. And look, there are a lot of things I disagree with.
Safety of our food.
Yes, and not traditionally necessarily a conservative issue, but I, you know, personally, you know, my wife and I feel very strongly about some of the issues that he's talking about. And there are a lot of things I disagree with Kennedy on. But so again, going back to that disruptor, I mean, there's a fundamental shift going on in American politics when you look at a Republican administration putting forward somebody like Kennedy that I think is going to, I mean, I don't think he's going to have a big impact, for example, on vaccines. I think he is going to disrupt this kind of cozy relationship between, you know, our ag and our food sectors and the regulating agencies that control that, because I think there are a lot of people that feel that, look, we're not a healthy country.
Well, another big part of what HHS does is manage huge programs like Medicaid. And a lot of advocates for Medicaid in Wisconsin are already sounding alarm bells. 1 million people using Medicaid in Wisconsin. There's about several billion dollars that come into Wisconsin for federal Medicaid dollars. Are those organizations that advocate around Medicaid, do they have a right to be concerned?
Absolutely. Right. I mean, it's their job, by the way. I mean, we have, in a democracy, you hope you have advocacy groups on different sides.
Do you think there'll be some cuts to Medicaid?
I don't know that. But I think Medicaid is incredibly popular, Medicare, and Social Security even more popular. I think that if an effort to cut Medicaid occurs, especially one that might in some way threaten Tommy Thompson's incredible accomplishment with creating Badger Care and things of that nature, I think you'll have pushback. And I think it will be very loud. I think you saw it already in the struggle around the freeze, right? And as Jake accurately points out, there was a lot of confusion there about what the memo said, what Trump people were saying, all this. But boy, when people thought that Medicaid, Medicare, Social Security might in any way be threatened, veterans benefits, a host of other things, you saw how very rapidly the political dynamic shifted, right?
And that got people's attention.
We didn't have a good campaign in 2024. We had a campaign that was vapid and that was largely, focused on she said that or he said that, and it didn't get to any kind
to
of
the
depth.
Issues.
And I think when you suddenly get to a situation where people are saying, wow, I'm not sure, I don't feel secure about benefits that I anticipated I would have.
Well, Congress,
that's very dangerous.
Congress right now is in the middle of negotiating some cuts across the federal government to align with and to help pay for some Trump administration priorities. Those cuts are reportedly between about $2.5 and $3 trillion. We've just talked about Medicaid. Are there any other federal agencies or federal programs that you think are probably on the chopping block or might be facing some cuts in the Trump administration?
Well, a couple things. First, if you actually really look closely, to the extent there were, some detailed plans, I think there certainly will be some cuts. But there's a lot of center-right groups that I think Trump will agree with that are going to focus more on some fundamental shifts like block grants. Mm-hmm. I think there's a strong argument to make, and there's a lot of groups out there. I follow closely the State Policy Network. They do really good work in this kind of federalism space. That they're not arguing for cuts necessarily. They're arguing states, if we have 50 units of government that can do it better, that are closer to the people, why would we not explore block grants?
So get federal government out of the way in like Medicaid and education, are you talking about?
Education, well, and look, if you love local government, I think we view the Department of Education and anybody who advocates for eliminating the Department of Education as some extremist. But I think we need to look at some of these federal agencies, and I think education would be one where, even at the state level, right, the Department of Education really is there in an administrative role, right? We were just talking before we went on air about the importance of school boards and school board elections, and that's where the passion is. That's where, frankly, most of the policy is made. And so if that's the case, why would we need another layer of government at the federal level? So I think that's one word. I don't think it's extreme to take that position on the Department of Education. And I think environmental is another one. At IRG, we just put out a report end of last year about SIPs, state implementation plans. I mean, people don't realize that there is this kind of behemoth. You have the EPA, and you have all these mandates where essentially the states, so our state DNR is essentially an arm for EPA on a lot of these programs. Well, then why not let, and SPN has done a lot of good work in this space where when you look at the federal standards versus state standards, a lot of the states actually exceed the federal standards. So then why not let the states do it?
Trump has nominated an oil and gas industry executive to head the Department of Energy. Some say that will stall out climate change efforts. What kind of impact do you think there will be in Wisconsin?
Maybe Jake's right. Maybe we should just, really at this point, move a lot of the action back to the states, especially states with Democratic governors.
I'm going to quote you on that, John. Yeah. I love that.
However, I'm going to have to differ just a tiny bit and say that you have to look back at why these agencies were created, right? And so often they were created because of the fact that some states were doing a great job and some states were doing a lousy job. And, it's not coincidental that Jimmy Carter was the person who created Department of Education, or at least was very active in the development there, because of a sense that there really was a north-south divide
in
this
country. So you
believe
there's a necessary role for a federal Department of Ed?
Sure. I think there's a necessary role for a floor, right? And you create a floor where states can do so much better. But when you deconstruct the federal government without a sense of you know, how to make sure that no place falls too far behind, I think that's a dangerous game. And so I'm not against reform. And I think that there are agencies that might be dialed down, dialed up. I respect that. But I think when that's done without thinking through the broad impact on the United States, because, look, I love Wisconsin. I'm rooted in this state at an incredibly deep level. My people came here in the 1820s. And so, to me, I always think Wisconsin's going to do better than any place else, right? But sometimes
there's still space for the federal government
sometimes
oversight.
Sometimes I'm wrong. Yeah.
You know, many of these proposed federal cuts or changes across the federal government are part of President Trump's DOGE effort that's headed by Elon Musk, the Department of Government Efficiency. I know that your organization, IRG, has been involved. You say you were DOGE before DOGE was cool.
I didn't come up with that.
That's a pretty good line, though. You should probably keep it.
Kind of government efficiency, but looking at Wisconsin specifically, what are the goals of your state DOGE effort at IRG?
So part of it is just telling the Wisconsin story. So I would agree with John. We have lots of examples where Wisconsin has been a true reformer nationwide. If you look at administrative law, regulatory reforms, Wisconsin was really a leader. And I think a lot of it is due to the efforts of Governor Walker, who looked at kind of this relationship between the legislature and the executive branch. I think often what gets lost in translation is a lot of those reforms that, frankly, the left criticizes essentially removed some of the executive power. So, I mean, Governor Walker, I think,
you mean
kind
the reforms
of,
with regard to regulation, oversight by the legislature?
Correct. I mean, it's fair to say that prior to 2011, really these executive branch agencies really had no reason to really involve the legislature to the extent they do today, because now it's statutorily required. And look, we do polling on this. We just did polling at the end of last year. 70% plus of Wisconsin residents support the legislature reviewing every executive branch proposed rule, which
because, you know, it has a local impact.
Because it absolutely has a local impact. We do a lot of work in this space. We've looked at the RAINS Act specifically, but even those that, so the RAINS Act is $10 million or more in economic impact, requires legislative review and approval. But what we have found is that, you know, even with those lesser proposed rules, you know, 5 million, a million, whatever the case may be, it has a direct impact on the economy. People forget local units of government. Are we talking about unfunded mandates? A lot of these proposed rules, the state is simply shifting those responsibilities and costs down to local units of government, and that's required as part of our economic impact analysis now, that local units of government have a seat at arguing, hey, this is going to impact us. Yeah.
John, I want to ask you, there's some recent AP polling that says that two-thirds of Americans actually believe there is a lot of corruption and inefficiency in the federal government. They're also concerned about federal red tape. Does that mean that Americans will support the shrinking of the federal government?
I think it means a return to the core progressive values of the past, which were that you wanted to have a strong government that did a lot of good for people, but you didn't want it to be tied to corporations. You didn't want it to be tied to billionaires who were, you know, looking for tax cuts. What you wanted was a government that was efficient, that was responsible, and that responded to the great mass of people, not to economic elites. And the fact of the matter is that, yeah, I definitely agree with that. I always remind people that the Wisconsin progressives of the La Follette era were incredibly efficient. They went out of their way to, they looked at every penny, seriously.
Has government gotten away from that?
Of course. And under Democratic and Republican leadership, even I dare say under our friend Scott Walker, that what we've ended up with is government that is very, very responsive to very wealthy people, to very politically connected people, and often very unresponsive to the great mass of folks who have real needs. And so I don't think people want to get rid of government. I think what they want to do is have a government that responds to them.
What's been the response to IRG's DOGE initiatives and, you know, government efficiency proposals? Are you working with the legislature? They have a new committee on government operations, accountability, and transparency. Is that part of your work?
We absolutely want to be active with them. I mean, look, both at the federal level, the state level, I don't think there's enough oversight. I don't care if it's a Republican or Democrat administration. There should be more oversight of the executive branch. If you agree with a co-equal kind of system of government. If I could just I would disagree that there's not a lot of room to improve when you look at UI benefits after COVID, significant wait time. I mean, there's anecdotal stories through DISPIS where individuals are waiting four to 6 months. So, I mean, we want to attract the best and brightest, right? Mm-hmm. And so when you have an agency like DISPIS that has to provide a license in certain professions to actually practice or to carry out your obligations, and we have somebody moving from outstate into Wisconsin, and they have to wait 4 to 6 months, how does that work? Mm-hmm. It doesn't. And that is a direct reflection on an agency that's not being efficient, and that's not, John, to use your language, to catering to the people. But that's why we need
these
reforms.
There's some agreement around improvement as possible.
No, this is massive agreement. And look, the only thing I would say is that I want to make sure that any reforms that occur are in the interest of the great mass of people, not in the interest of wealthy folks, lobbyists, powerful interests.
You're not a fan of Elon Musk?
You know, I don't know Elon well enough. to be honest, I've been very interested in some of the things he's done over the years. I think right now he's certainly, he's aligned politically in one place, and I guess the only thing I would say about Elon Musk is, like most billionaires, I'd like to tax him more.
You know, I want to talk about Wisconsin's budget and how everything that's happening in Washington might affect us here at home. We know that about 28% of Wisconsin's overall budget is made up of federal funding. I'll start with you, Jake. What advice would you give to the legislature as they will be handed the governor's budget with this uncertainty of what might be changing and coming down the road with federal funding and federal programs?
So Wisconsin, relatively speaking, is actually in a good position. When you look at other states, there are some states, and again, SPN, people are going to think this is an ad for SPN, but they just do really good work in this federal State Policy Network. They do really good work in this federalism space. And so they, for example, have a scorecard that looks at all 50 states. They have 20, basically, metrics, internal and external, that they look at. In other words, how does the legislature interact with its executive branch? How does the state interact with the federal government? One of their metrics is looking at how tied to the federal government is a state. There are states, particularly in the Southeast, where their budgets are 60-65% tied to federal grants, federal funds. So Wisconsin is actually one of the best.
So you think if we receive less federal funding, we'll still be okay?
We'll still be okay, but my call to the legislature would be, look closely at those federal funds. You know, what's the expression? There's no free lunch. All those federal dollars comes with the conditions, maintenance of effort, MOEs, which is just additional spending at the state level. So I think the legislature needs to think long and hard, particularly
which
if there's going to be
federal programs to participate.
Exactly, if there's going to be this disruption again, I think in a good way at the federal level, then maybe we need to rethink. Do we accept some of these federal funds?
Do you have advice for legislators about how to look at the budget given the federal context?
Sure. Look, it's a challenging situation. We do have a large surplus in Wisconsin. That gives us a bit of a cushion. I think you'll see caution in the initial stages, even among some Republicans, because of an uncertainty about what's happening in Washington as regards what you do with that surplus. Obviously, there's a great debate in Wisconsin about whether you use that surplus for education, tax cuts, all sorts of people putting things forward. I think that this may delay that to some extent. And this gets to a core concern about Trump's presidency, the disruption. I think we can agree. There are arguments for disruption. But when you create a situation where there's so much uncertainty about how the federal government will participate, how it will play, that becomes very problematic for the states. And I do think that there are places where the states will look at what federal programs they participate in or which ones they won't. But they will, by and large, want to participate. They'll want that federal funding. It's just they won't be sure
how much and
when it's coming. And the last thing I'll say is about the mandates from the federal level. Sometimes they can be challenging for a state. but also sometimes they can make a state better. And I always warn that you've got to get into the nuance here. I think that there are legislators, Republicans and Democrats, who are willing to get into that nuance. This may be the most interesting legislative session in recent Wisconsin history because of what's happening at the federal level.
I want to ask, we're having such a great conversation, but I have a couple issues I want to ask about that have been in the headlines these last 2 weeks. Immigration. President Trump's already taken some pretty significant steps around immigration. We know in Wisconsin we have about 47,000 undocumented workers. They say 23% of them are employed in manufacturing, 10% in agriculture, just in Wisconsin alone. Will these mass deportation plans have an impact on Wisconsin's economy?
So, a couple things. So, IRG has done a lot of work in this space as well. And again, we've looked at it not necessarily from a federal, nationwide standpoint. I don't think enough people have looked at what the impact is on local communities. We specifically looked at the situation in Whitewater. And the impact on a small city, 10,000 individuals, you're adding 1,000 migrants, that's just simply not sustainable. You can't increase a population by 7 to 10% over the course of 2 years and not realize that there's going to be a huge impact on services to the residents that are there. With respect to immigration, look, I think as a country, we have to have a very real conversation. The border has to be secured. When you look at the numbers during the Biden administration, you had months where it approached 250,000 encounters in a month at the border. Under Obama, Bush, those numbers would fluctuate between 20 and 50,000. And so
what President Trump is doing is good and important.
You have a leak in a pipe. You shut off the pipe. You plug the hole. We have
what
to secure the border.
What kind of impact do you think these policies will have on Wisconsin?
Look, I think we need to have immigration reform in this country. We've needed it for a long time. It needs to be humane. It needs to be responsible. It needs to recognize that immigrants bring a lot to this country. And immigrants have, since before we became a state, brought an awfully lot to Wisconsin. I just think that's the context in which we should see this. We have an awful lot of folks who are migrants who are working on farms, really sustaining a lot of our dairy industry, and rebuilding main streets in some communities around this state. And so I would be very uncomfortable with a kind of heavy-handed approach that loses sight of the massive contribution that immigrants have made now for the better part of 200 years to Wisconsin, and that we are not, our history's not done. We are not, kind of locked in some place where those contributions can't be made. That doesn't argue against smart immigration reform, but it does argue for somebody to actually start getting committed to smart immigration reform. And to be honest, I think we can criticize both parties on this issue.
A long time coming. What about tariffs? As we speak, we know that tariffs are going to be implemented against Mexico, Canada, and China. We also know that those Canada, Mexico, China, major trade partners for Wisconsin. What do you see the outcome of tariffs on our state?
So first of all, I would differentiate between Canada, Mexico, and China. I would definitely put China in its own category, right? The intellectual property theft, the imbalance with China, and the fact that they are, without a doubt, the biggest threat to national security in the United States. So I kind of put the tariffs on China in its own category. Look, Trump is going to propose these tariffs. You already saw Trudeau race down to Florida to have that conversation with Trump. Part of this is, I think, it's just a negotiating tool that he's going to use. It may or may not.
It might not even be implemented.
It may or may not. But and then in Mexico, I would also put in a different category because I think Trump is going to use these tariffs. They're not in a vacuum. He's using those within the context of immigration and national security. Not to go back to immigration, but look, fentanyl is now the leading cause of death between 18 and 45-year-olds in the country. Whether it's 10% is coming across the border, 90% is going through ports of entry, or 20, 30, whatever that number is, it's too much. And so, again, until we secure that border, it's not going to stop. And if tariffs are one of those tools that Trump can use to get the Mexican government to actually take action against the cartels that are directly killing Americans by infusion of fentanyl, that's
a
good thing.
Tariffs, good or bad, or for Wisconsin?
A mix, of course. I mean, look, there's probably a point in our lives, and I'm older here, probably a point in our lives where we are on a different side of the tariff issues, where I was advocating, you know, in favor of tariffs to maintain some basic industries in the United States, and I have in my lifetime. I think that there is always an argument for tariffs, but if you do tariffs in blanket approaches, like we're going to do a such and such tariff on a country, that has nothing to do with economics. That is about political negotiation. And at the end of the day, that is not necessarily good for Wisconsin industries, for Wisconsin farmers. And I think this is the concern I have. In his first term, Donald Trump did tariffs that created a lot of difficulty for Americans and American workers and for American farmers. Now, they poured money in to try and, you know, balance things out, which then again created a challenge for American taxpayers. So at the end of the day, what I would suggest to you is that I think that tariffs can be very useful at critical stages, but done in a ham-handed, ill-thought way, they can be exceptionally destructive. So we'll be, and you know who used to say that? Conservatives. Well,
remains to be seen, right? So our final question for both of you. What do you hope that the outcome for Wisconsin will be after 4 years with the Trump administration?
Trump has to, he ran almost exclusively on a few issues, one of them being immigration, one of them being really reforming government. And as we've talked about really throughout this segment, I think there's an opportunity to actually address the immigration issue. I think there's an opportunity to actually reform government. I think, if nothing else, Wisconsin can really look hard at that relationship with the federal government. We're not a tool of the federal government. And I would say that's a bipartisan criticism, right? It shouldn't be, well, there's a friendly federal administration, therefore, you know, and we're aligned, therefore our state's going to kind of do the Fed's bidding. If we, after 4 years, can realign that relationship, I think that would be a good thing. I mean, one point I've been wanting to bring up, when you look at kind of like these federal versus state standards, I just read something really interesting. When you look at like OSHA standards, there are now 22 states that exceed mm-hmm. OSHA standards. So and John, I think you made a fair point. There may have been a time where all these federal agencies were necessary to kind of coordinate efforts to maybe bring low-performing states up. I'm starting to wonder, so I'm getting to your question, I'm starting to wonder if we're at that point where over the next few years we can have a real conversation about, have we reached that point? You know, do we need these federal agencies to be dictating if most of the, or many states are now at federal standards or surpassing? In which case, let the states do that work.
So I'll give you the same question. What do you hope the outcome for Wisconsin will be with 4 years under the Trump administration?
Well, first off, I'll be satisfied when we hit the mark nationally, where we don't have rising economic inequality and all of the challenges we have as a society. There's a reason why most people are dissatisfied with the direction of the United States, whether a Democrat or a Republican is in place. So like Tom Paine, I believe, you know, we've got a lot of work to do. I don't think we can suggest for a second that we've hit our mark on most things. As for Wisconsin, I want Wisconsin to be the North Star. I always want Wisconsin to be the state that does better. One of the things that truly has disappointed me in recent years is where we have compared ourselves with other states, and we're saying, well, we're doing as good as them. We're doing as good as Mississippi. We're doing as good as Tennessee. I'm never satisfied with that. I believe America needs Wisconsin, and I believe America needs the innovation, the insight, the vision of Wisconsin as a state that does better. And sometimes that's going to require the government to do more. Sometimes it's going to require the private sector to do more. But I always want Wisconsin to stand out. And so my main concern about the Trump era is anything that would make it harder for us to do that. If it makes it easier, that I understand. And I, you know, that's going to make it interesting. But I will tell you, the Wisconsin tradition, whether you run it through Tommy Thompson or Robert M. La Follette, or you go back as far as you can, the Wisconsin tradition is to say of the United States, this is a great country, but we want to show you how to do it better. And that's what I want. I want Wisconsin to come out in that kind of a renewed sense of that leadership position.
Justin, you agree?
Absolutely. I love Wisconsin.
We all love
it. I want to be the best state in the union. I think on some metrics we are.
Well, that'll be the final word. And thank you so much, both of you, for
pleasure.
Joining us.
Thank you. Hey.
And thank you to the viewers of Newsmakers. Be sure to tune in again as we highlight the issues and sit down with the decision makers who make a difference for all of us.
You have been watching a production of Wisconsin Eye, your unfiltered window into legislative deliberations and public policy programming, where our mission is to provide Wisconsinites an opportunity to access the legislative process and connect with conversations that inform our citizenry. Please consider supporting our mission, and thank you for watching. Wisconsin Eye, policy made public. Nicolet Bank is honored to support all who strive to make communities great.